Monster Man, special episode, Killer Dolls. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by my Patreon backers. Everyone who goes to patreon.com/monsterman and subscribes at the $5 or higher level gets a bonus episode recorded just for them about a monster of their choice. And this episode actually comes with an apology. Way back when Benjamin Paulson backed, he didn't get his special episode. I don't know how I missed it. Maybe I just didn't get sent the notification. I've been and checked, and I'm pretty sure that now everyone who has an episode coming is on the list. And if you are a $5 backer and don't have the link to the special spreadsheet, just send me a message on Patreon and I'll get it to you. Anyway, Ben asked me to talk about Killer Dolls. Now, this is an interesting one. This is one of those episodes that's more focused on a monster concept than a specific iteration of a monster, and I think it's fascinating. You see, killer dolls are a staple of horror fiction, but translating them to Dungeons & Dragons is a little bit challenging. So let's talk about them. The idea of dolls that animate or come to life is a feature of children's literature, and indeed of not children's literature, that obviously derives from the fact that, you know, it's easy to conceive of anything that looks like a person being or becoming a person. And obviously the most famous instance of this is the 1883 book, The Adventures of Pinocchio by Carlo Collodi. Now, I haven't read The Adventures of Pinocchio, but my wife has. And as she was reading it, she would point out parts of it to me. And it's a bit darker than the Disney film, quite different in many ways. And I think there's that level of ambiguity in all doll stories, that dolls are often portrayed as inhabiting a particularly kind of dark or unsettling world, even when they're not themselves understood as villainous. And I think this has something to do with the fact that dolls inhabit what's been called the Uncanny Valley. The Uncanny Valley is this concept that says that humans tend to like things as they look more and more human. In a way that we look at a bulldog and we think, oh, that's a grumpy dog. Who's a good grumpy dog? That's because there's something human-like about the arrangement of the bulldog's features. Humans relate with images as they get closer and closer and closer to human appearance, until they get very close, at which point it suddenly drops down again. And this dip in the curve is the valley to which the phrase uncanny valley refers. That is to say, we like it when things are humans, and we like it when things are kind of like humans, but we don't like it when things are very like humans, but not humans. And so for that reason, it's obvious that dolls play a role in horror fiction and in horror film. It's no surprise that killer doll stories are particularly common in visual horror media. One example of this would be the 1945 film Dead of Night, which has a segment about a ventriloquist's dummy. And probably the most famous killer doll in horror media is Chucky from Child's Play. And that makes it specifically a child's doll rather than a ventriloquist's dummy. And, you know, also plays off the idea of a doll as a stand-in for a child. You know, the doll is frightening to children and frightening in sort of like in the ways that it inverts our understandings of how a child is supposed to behave. There are other examples. The Puppet Master series of films, which I've never seen one, but I understand that they have a sort of cult following. And the less than successful What If Toy Story Was an Action Movie features small soldiers, which took the same logic and applied it to like a G.I. Joe type action figures. The biggest problem with these kinds of monsters in a Dungeons & Dragons game is that very small monsters don't tend to pose a major physical threat. And killer doll stories are often predicated on a mundane setting where the human characters are just ordinary people. In fact, very often children. That is to say that they are monsters where the threat is that they're going to murder you. But murdering someone is difficult from killing them in a stand-up fight. Some horror monsters translate very well into D&D. Examples of this would be things like the werewolf, the vampire, the mummy. And those are all monsters that at some base level provide a physical threat that you can imagine, you know, a brave person standing up to fight and still being defeated. If in real life a killer doll started stalking me with, I don't know, a pair of scissors, I would lose my mind with terror. But if a killer doll started going after my Dungeons & Dragons character, it would be two short swords time. You know, if I fight bears and wolves and orcs and stuff, I'm not concerned about a tiny little doll if its only threat is that it's going to knife me. Lots of people are trying to knife me. It's not special. Dungeons & Dragons characters inhabit a world where the assumptions of safety and domesticity that the idea of the killer doll violates don't exist in the first place. And so that means that in order to make a killer doll work in a Dungeons & Dragons setting, we have to take one of its aspects and emphasize it. So what are the symbolic elements that make up the killer doll? Well, a killer doll is childlike or related to children, right? It's a child's toy. It's small, so we might be playing with ideas of scale, kind of in an inverse of the way that we did with giants. It's human-like, so again, we have that Uncanny Valley concept. And it's inanimate, so we have the concept of inanimate things coming to life. And so from each of these core concepts that relate to the killer doll, we can then expand on them to try and create scenario concepts in which a killer doll type monster fits. One way to do this is to ask the question, what's animating the doll? And so there you'd have a scenario that focuses on the idea of the doll as a symptom rather than as the problem itself. So for instance, I once ran a scenario where the problem was that there was this magical artifact that was essentially, that was damaged. It was basically leaking magical energy, and it was turning living beings to inanimate material and animating inanimate objects. The player character is being chased around by animated suits of armor, but the living soldiers inside those suits of armor had been turned to stone. Or at one point they had to fight a swarm of flying kitchen knives. All that kind of thing. So in that context, you could have a doll as kind of the ringleader of that. One can imagine that an animated doll would be more of a talker, more of a thinker than an animated rug or an animated sword or whatever. So you could definitely have a sense in which like everything in a house, everything in a castle, let's say, has become animated. And, you know, the prince is trapped on top of his wardrobe, desperately trying to fend off the legion of all his toys led by a doll riding on the back of a rocking horse. In fact, that would be a lot of fun because one could imagine that the young princes, teddy bears and toy soldiers and so on, would have any number of real grievances against this person. Or you could be having the big fight against all the animated armoires and credenzas in the Great Hall, and then the doll, like, leaps down off the chandelier and goes at you with some knitting needles. I've said before that dolls don't pose a physical threat to the same extent as other monsters, but that doesn't mean that that idea can't be every bit as frightening. There's always a sense of realism involved in fighting monsters that are based on or equipped with everyday objects. It is more frightening to think about being stabbed with a knitting needle than it is to think about having your head cut off with a battle axe, because for most of us, we don't really deal with a battle axe, right? The idea, like, that idea belongs to the realm of fantasy, whereas the idea of being stabbed with a needle is very real. A bat with a nail through it is more frightening than a mace, even though they're ultimately the same thing. A brick in a sock is more frightening than a flail, even though, again, they're just a big heavy object you hit somebody with. Likewise, the killer doll is maybe more frightening than like a gremlin or an imp or whatever else might be up in the chandelier, ready to empty a box full of thumbtacks and broken glass over the stairs just as you try to go down. Another thing to do to get past the idea that the doll is physically fragile would be to have the problem be the spirit that is animating the doll. So you have the doll, and the doll is possessed by a spirit, a bit like the dolls that appear on Haunted Doll Watch on My Brother and Me. And so there the problem would ultimately be the possessing force, right? So you could bash all the dolls that you want, but sooner or later that spirit is going to get into another child's doll and you're just going to have to start the problem all over again. So you're going to have to go and find the ghost of the little girl or whatever it is. And so there the killer doll is essentially merely a clue to a mystery, right? Why is it that this spirit wants to kill, you know, the old doll maker who lives on the edge of town, and how do we stop it? So we make the doll essentially unkillable, that it's some kind of spirit entity that preferentially possesses dolls, and you need to get to the bottom of the mystery. The dolls are a symptom. Another way to do that would be to have the child who owns the doll be a giant and have the dolls be people-sized. This is particularly horrible if people are being turned into dolls. You know, I mentioned The Dead of Night is not listed as the first killer doll film, if you look at the list of them on Wikipedia, because there is one, of course. But actually, the first one that they list is not right. The first film on the list is Devil Doll, which is not about or Devil Dolls, which is not about a killer doll, but about people being shrunk down to doll size, which, actually, is that also the case in The Puppet Master? Like I said, I've never seen it. Or I was thinking of Doll Man. Yeah, Doll Man, right? Doll Man is not a doll. He's a man who is doll-sized. So what if you had a giant who was kind of keeping people as dolls, and maybe even giving them, like, the kind of, you know, porcelain doll faces? That's horrible. It's part of the MO of the Batman villain Professor Pig as well, right? That he turns people into dollotrons. Another way to deal with the smallness of the killer doll is to have it be something like a swarm monster. That's what I did with my cloud of flying butcher knives. You don't want to get trapped in the middle of a cloud of butcher knives. That sounds like a pretty bad situation to be in. And one can imagine a swarm of tiny little robots clambering up your trouser leg and, you know, untying your shoelaces, and it's all a bit Army of Darkness, really. You could either have an undifferentiated mass of them, or you could sort of put them in units. Like, one can imagine that there's, you know, Mommy, Daddy, and Baby Bear, you know, or Barbie and Ken, or something like that. You know, that they operate in little groups. And here I think you can maybe play up, like, the inconvenience and the almost prankishness of the doll, where they're sort of, like, clambering up onto the tops of doors and dropping a bucket on you, or they're setting tripwires, or they're, you know, driving their dream car, like, under your feet while you're trying to fight somebody else, and they're just generally being annoying. And I think there, you know, you have the, like, Gulliver's Travels kind of image, where it's funny to have large creatures, you know, struggling while under attack by large numbers of smaller creatures. And you can do a whole King Kong bit, you know, there's various approaches you can take. But yeah, some of that Toy Story mischief, but with the PCs as the victims. You could also have the killer doll be a curse that was placed on someone, and that puts a fun limitation on the monster, because the living doll is dangerous, but you can't just bash it with your mace, because you're trying to free this person who has been cursed by being transformed into a living doll. It could be a whole bunch of people, so maybe all the children of the village are cursed to be turned into dolls by a magical doll maker who got stiffed on a payment, like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Or maybe it's the world's best doll maker who was cursed by a vengeful deity, or the Duke hired a witch as a babysitter, and she was so annoyed by this terrible child that she turned it into a doll, and the doll runs around, like, just doing all the awful things that a spoiled child of privileged parents would do if you gave it superpowers, but you still can't beat its head in, because in reality, it's a kid. I should say that a lot of these scenarios inevitably are going to involve peril to children, and I know there are players who are not into that. I certainly have an old gaming buddy who was never a big fan of the peril to children motif, but fatherhood has turned it into something where he basically just can't enjoy things that involve peril to children, you know, as a plot element. And I quite see his point. You know, I think if you're tasked with the safety of a real child, thinking about all the bad things that could happen to a child maybe is not a ton of fun to experience. You know, I think you can probably turn up the silliness level of this scenario that doesn't really come up. But as always, when introducing an element like that, I think it's something you want to know how your players are going to respond to it. Another thing to do would be to have the doll be the treasured childhood plaything of a particular player character, right? And for some reason, the characters go back to, or on whatever quest, they stop in this PC's village. And it's like, oh, you've come back, Thrognor. You can stay in your old room. You know, and here's this mighty barbarian with his feet sticking off the edge of this little bed, and, like, it's all just the same as when he left, and, like, there's Mr. Jelly Buttons right by the pillow. But what's this? Mr. Jelly Buttons is moving. You know, so you can do something like that. And again, where you play on the kind of, like, sentimental attachment that we actually tend to have to our toys. Another thing to do would be to have the doll be a doll of a specific person. You have to decide whether you're in the kind of D&D setting that has a toy-making industry. So there was a recent episode of The Adventure Zone that focused on, you know, fighting a bunch of animated action figures in a Christmas episode about, you know, getting the particular action figure that a child wanted for Christmas. But that's predicated on a much more kind of industrial fantasy setting where there's, like, a toy factory. But if the doll is of a specific person, you know, maybe someone's fairy godmother made the doll and they happened to make it based on their absent father or something like that. Maybe the fact that something is happening to the doll is an indicator that something is happening to the person, right? Because we think of dolls as being linked to people. That's sort of an aspect of the Salem witch trials, is this idea that these people had poppets, which is basically just the same root word as puppets, but it means, you know, dolls. You know, presumably that works like what we popularly imagine a voodoo doll to be like, that if that there's a sympathetic connection between the doll and the person. So maybe the fact that the doll has gone evil is based on the fact that something terrible has happened to the person the doll is based on. So I think these are all things that you can do with the killer doll as a D&D concept. And I think that most of the time that means a small-scale horror-type scenario. You know, these all seem to lend themselves better to an investigative-type structure than just having a killer doll wandering around a dungeon. And that's not unusual. There are a lot of D&D monsters that do not show themselves to best advantage when just wandering around a dungeon. It's actually not a very interesting thing for any monster to do. The only exception to that is that you could definitely have a whole playroom dungeon. So you can imagine that the walls of the dungeon passages are alphabet blocks, and there are tin soldiers, and there are bears, and there are, I don't know, race cars. Maybe not race cars, but you know what I mean. And there, the doll's humanness, even compared to other humaniform toys, would give it a kind of special character status, right? So you're making your way through the dungeon, which is, you know, this child's dreamland. The doll would be a face character, right? I can't imagine that tin soldiers say much beyond, "Sir, yes, sir," or whatever. You know, but the doll might be someone that you could talk to. We haven't really talked about the idea of dolls as beautiful. I think that doll-like beauty is something that we understand as a particularly frightening concept. The idea of being made over into an artificial thing in order to make you more beautiful is something that we are both tempted by and repelled by. And I think you can definitely do something with that. This also seems like it ties in well with fairy tale kind of structures, obviously, and fairy characters. And we've talked in the past about the idea that fairies both represent how children see adults and how adults see children. Capricious, demanding, whimsical creatures. You can definitely imagine the fairy queen coming galloping into the lands of mortals because she wants to get the perfect doll for her child and just scooping up the world's best doll maker, and taking him away to fairy to make dolls. And of course, the dolls that were made in the land of fairy would have some kind of supernatural properties. In Changeling the Lost, you can actually play that as a character type. In fact, I did, although my guy had been a chess piece rather than a doll. So you could definitely, that would also work. You could have, it would fit with the giant idea, right? Just a sort of like, the giant is a good child monster for the like rambunctious rowdy child, and the like fairy princess is a good monster for the spoiled brat. I mean, actually, you know, depending on how wholesome you want to be, you could have a less cynical take on children where this child is sad because someone has taken its beloved doll. And, you know, here you are on the way to your quest. Like, will you help this child sobbing by the side of the road because a bigger kid took its doll? And you're like, don't cry, sport. We'll get your doll back. And you go off and you get the doll. But it turns out that, like, the bigger kid is an ogre. And actually, it all turns out to be much more complicated. But then when you get back, the child turns out to be some kind of magical creature and grants you a wish. I mean, if you have a high fairy tale level in your D&D game, you can definitely have that. You can even have the doll turn out to be a killer doll. And even so, you bring this thing back, like, wrapped up in 50 feet of rope and attached to the back of a mule. And the little kid's like, Oh, Stabby, I thought I'd never see you again. Thank you, strangers. I think that could work. All right, so yeah, I think the classic killer doll of the killer doll horror movie doesn't fit very cleanly in with most fantasy RPGs, but I think that all you have to do is turn it slightly in the direction of one of its many different aspects, and you're good to go. So that is the killer doll, and that was the special episode for Benjamin Paulson. So Ben, I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I hope everyone else did too. Remember that bonus episodes like these are brought to you, not just to my Patreon subscribers, but to everyone, free, gratis, and for nothing, courtesy of the generosity of my supporters. And if you'd like to be one of those supporters, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and sign up at the level of your choice. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters. Because monsters are great. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.